This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. So this idea just popped into my head while I was cleaning up in the kitchen. Many people talk and write that perhaps the biggest issue ongoing and nothing new is what's called class warfare, or the haves and the have-nots, or the elite and the unwashed masses, and whatever other metaphor you can put to it. So I'm not going to contradict that, but I'm just going to pose another idea that popped into my head, that it is more about contentment and happiness warfare. Because I was dealing with a bit of shoulder, neck tension, headache, and then I was doing something that was funny, saw something funny, and then I started to smile, and I started to feel better, and I was like, wow, what if I just, like, smile a lot? And you think about people who, when you see them, they're just, like, happy, and they make you feel happy. And not that everybody should walk around smiling like an idiot, but just the idea of being happy, like really being happy. And that led me to that theory that popped in, which is that like much of the system of domination and the system of the class warfare is to deliberately subdue people and not allow them to be happy. Because the concerns take over, you know, the job, the bill paying, the bad relationship, the state of the world, and on and on. So what is imposed upon people are the conditions in which then people lose touch with the underlying, or as I like prefer, under-truthing, that our normal state of being is meant to be content and happy. And this is not to contradict challenges and the normal life stuff, but in general, I think that people have been put down and subdued by all the pressures, and this is what the system of domination, whether the class warfare and the separation, the distraction from the natural world, that it does to people. Because what do people want to do on their day off? Sometimes they want to go out and go for a hike. They want to go to the ocean. They want to sit in the backyard. That is the natural state of happiness. So how did we get distracted from that? We got distracted from that by having to work so hard and scrape so hard to get by, and that's all in that system, the systemic pressures, that whatever label one puts to them. Dalai Lama has a book called The Art of Happiness. Of course, there's many, many books and new agey books out there about being happy, and I'm talking about the happiness that's like that innate, natural, content place. I don't know, the point here is just not to have a blueprint, but just to encourage to people being happier and content. It's like, hey, you want to go out and have a cup of coffee and have a nice chat? Or you want to just hang out and talk? You want to go for a walk? You want to help me prune the garden? Whatever it is, those kind of things are what builds connection and camaraderie and community. And then I'm going to part two this thing with frustration. I've noticed sometimes how if something doesn't work, I get frustrated right away. And that I have to tell myself, whoa, calm down. And I think this is part of the this age of technology where, and this age of click this and click that, even though I don't do a lot of it. I do a fair amount working on, you know, on the computer and writing and doing layout and design. I do a fair amount But people are clicking and the food's there. They click and they order a package and they click. Like I just had to, the mouse stopped working. So I had to just basically took a couple minutes and I put in a new battery and then it worked again. But I noticed that moment of like, what the fuck? I gotta deal with this. It doesn't work right away. I gotta keep up with stuff. So that's another one of my concerns, is how this technology and this culture is affecting our expectations and our privileges, that we we expect it everything right away. It's like instant gratification is not just getting a thing now. Instant gratification is like us as extensions of the gadgets, where if the gadget doesn't work, it's like, you know, almost room for upsetness. Maybe I don't get out enough, and maybe other people just calmly deal with it. I don't know, but it just seems to be an energy thing going on. And this is part three of what is now called, because I hadn't planned this, the Cone Fragments of a Distorted World series, which normally is an essay, but this makes it to an audio version. Entertainment and bylines and stars and stuff. It's been one of my biggest lessons as an artist, and what I've been aware of from a spiritual point of view for decades is that what we attribute to individuals can also be looked at as an expression of a kind of sort of coming from another plane or dimension, communications, channeling, information, songs. I'm an avid song quoter because I just walk around and songs, quotes pop into my head. So to me, that's the message that is coming through. It's the message from wherever that is coming through. So it's not so much the particular artist. So yeah, I'm going to quote Bob Dylan a lot or Bruce Coburn because they're some of my faves. But that's not to put them on a pedestal or idolize them in a way that is beyond what even they would want. So I think the culture, I mean, I grew up in watching variety talk shows with my dad, Johnny Carson, Merv Griffin, all that stuff. So I grew up immersed in entertainment, but I think that as a culture, we get caught up in the star syndrome and who wrote it and who sung it, and that then that person becomes bigger than the story. Which that as I'm saying that reminds me of First Voices Radio and La Cota French Jokerson saying that don't become bigger than the message. And I think that's an important thing that people lose sight of and artists lose sight of, because they want to oftentimes make a name for themselves, and the name becomes more important than the message, and they get sucked into that syndrome. Some kind of syndrome, I'd call it, whether it's personal or cultural, where everything revolves around the stars, but it's not in the sky. It's who's acting like a star, instead of realizing that actually, literally, in a cosmic way, some of those lines may be literally coming from the stars up in the sky, or coming from the humble sparrow, or coming from the humble ant. It's not looking for a byline. It's not looking for a book contract. So it's, I think more attention needs to be paid to from whence the message comes and what the message is. And obviously that can get tangled too. Historically, people claim to have heard God say this, and then they go say this or that, and then they go around committing various atrocities because God said so. So the whole topic takes discussion, but in the entertainment, I'm thinking of the artist and the artist field where, many people, I've read of many people, somebody sent me an article by Cormac McCarthy, who's considered one of the greatest American novelists. And I read the article And I agreed with one little thing about it. He was talking about the origin of language. I just found it, just the whole thing was like way off base as far as what I know. So I think the whole thing with, I haven't read his works. Then I looked online and it said he's known for being a great American novelist, and his novels have to deal with a lot of violence and nihilism. So not on my list, but you know, he's well known. So I don't know, but again, my point, again, I'm just pointing to the fact that this whole thing of fame and notoriety and the name can override the message and override one's pursuit of just simply being an artist in the flow of daily life and trying to express what, trying to express something, trying to convey something. And speaking of messages and songwriters, here, this is on Bruce Cockburn's website. It's, I presume it's kind of like his guiding light, because it's, there it is, his quote at his website underneath the graphics for, I think he just put out his 38th album. Part of the job of being human is just to try to spread light at whatever level you can do it. Part of the job of being human is just to try to spread light at whatever level you can do it. I like that quote. I can relate to that quote. Speaking of humble, I'll wrap up with quoting one of my books, Musings with the Golden Sparrow, because it speaks to the humbleness that that started this book, about, you know, kind of a reverence for the sparrows. And this the first page or so just came to me in a flow, probably written in the car, because it just came to me in that spontaneous flow. The sparrow is perhaps the humblest bird, not that all birds aren't humble, darting and gliding under Father Sky, feeding and nesting with Mother Earth, listening to Brother Wind, drinking sister's waters, the rays from the light beings at dawn, communing a chorus of song, their kind gathering in all manner of unassuming places. Everywhere this traveler has ever traveled, he has seen sparrows. Small towns dotting the landscape known as Turtle Island to the original inhabitants, or the U.S. Empire to those who fail to remember, fail to acknowledge the uncommodified roots of their sudden successes. City streets and parks, quiet suburban yards and bustling mall parking lots, a multitude of varieties blending in with the locals like common folk. Everyday work people, the mechanic repairing your vehicle, the server preparing your coffee. Everywhere, sparrows filling the empty spaces, the empty moments, giving people a chance to cast off loneliness. So thanks for listening. Be well.